Hi, this is Kathy Grant, here to welcome you to this week's TribCast. In full disclosure, I'm a paid advocate here in Texas, also known as a lobbyist. I am not, however, being paid to advocate for the TribCast. I encourage each of you to maintain a rigid state of flexibility as Reeve Hamilton and this week's TribCast crew try to help us understand the ins and outs of Texas politics. Ladies and gentlemen, Reeve Hamilton.
Thank you. This is Reeve Hamilton here with the TribCast for the first week of June. Joining me is Editor-in-Chief Evan Smith.
Yo, Reeve.
Yo.
Well,
you threw me off there.
I'm trying to go a little down market.
That's not how we usually greet each other.
I want more of the kids to listen to the podcast.
Ben Philpott of KUT and the Texas Tribune.
You use that as a punishment for the kids? You have to listen.
You can't see it, but Ben is wearing a big clock around his neck.
Well, good, because we're running late on this TribCast already. And Ryan Murphy from the Tribune is making his TribCast debut.
Hey, Reef.
And I'm sure you're all wondering what the rigid state of flexibility is as referenced
in the
intro.
What the hell is she talking about?
Well, based on my sleuthing, it seems to be a Ken Armbruster quote from 1994 describing the legislative process. So she's showing her age there a little bit. She's at least 18, so we know that.
So in order to balance her,
that's why we have Ryan.
Actually, right.
I'm also the appeal to the youth.
Yes, Ryan is the Selena Gomez of this podcast.
I'll take that.
Would Todd, our producer, be the Justin Bieber? He's messing with his hair. Anyway, okay, Ryan.
And he's supremely untalented.
Ryan is also apparently one of the most dangerous people in the Capitol community based on the Sunset Commission discussion of Texas ethics, ability to release.
He could kidnap children from anybody across the
Inciting
state.
Inciting a home invasion. At the home of Senator Joan Huffman, apparently.
You seem a little bit incensed about this, Evan. You want to explain?
Well, I want Ryan to have the opportunity to shine a light on his good work. I will say simply that the idea that the Sunset Advisory Commission has declined to give its blessing to the online posting of state officials and, you know, lawmakers, elected officials' personal financial disclosure statements is absurd. It is absolutely absurd. For one thing, we already have them online. They're already online. The idea that they're going to build a bridge to the 20th century in terms of open government is nutty. This is exactly what the public wants and deserves and demands, is greater transparency about the personal financial conflicts that elected officials may have as they do our business. They will not post those personal financial statements online so a maximum number of people in the state can see them. If they won't, we will, and you have.
How do you have to get them if you're – say you're in you know, what's a city that's not Austin?
El Paso?
Say you're in Marfa.
Yes. Say you're in Marfa. Let's all take a minute and imagine zen out on what it would be like right now to be in Marfa.
And you want to look at some personal financial documents.
You want to see your state representative, Pete Gallego, I believe, represents Marfa. So let's just say you want to see Pete Gallego's personal financial disclosure statement, and you're in Marfa. Other than the Texas Tribune posting it, can you get online and do it? In a pre-Ryan Murphy world,
how would you have found them?
Well, that was what was kind of interesting about the whole argument of, you know, we want people, you know, to have to come down to Austin to see these documents.
Legitimate organizations, I believe.
That was Senator Huffman's statement. Legitimate organizations.
Well, I mean,
Switch to somewhere that's not Marfa, perhaps.
They're a legitimate organization, Marfa. Shut up.
But I mean, like, in that case, you know, if you are in Marfa, you want to find your reps, see their personal financial statement. All it takes really is just an email to the Ethics Commission.
So actually, the average individual living in a place like Marfa can now simply write an email to the Ethics Commission and say, would you please send me Pete Gallego's personal, I mean, not picking on him for any reason, he represents that district. Send me Pete Gallego's personal financial disclosure statement. That can happen.
Yes, and that's what we do. I mean, the difference is we usually have like 100 people on that list, but it's really curious that is an example given of why.
Do you think the Senate and the members of the legislature who are on this deal know that it's already something that you can do?
Or that you compiled a list and already put it online?
That we already have it?
Well, forget about us.
Apparently people that were watching this hearing yesterday and them talking about this were looking up their personal, the legislators' personal financial documents On our site.
On our website.
It.
Awesome.
Did you have a spike during the Ethics Commission?
But I really want to understand this because,
And we're not a legitimate organization.
Open government is not...
That was a compliment.
Yeah, I guess apparently we are not. Yeah. Open government is not a radical concept, or at least it's no longer a radical concept. The idea that you want government to be more transparent is no longer this boutique-y radical notion. It's something that everybody on the left and the right and in the middle embraces.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't the legislature's position on this be more open government is better?
And it's certainly the direction that a lot of these agencies are going in terms of making these things available. The comptroller, the TA, or all like these major state organizations are moving toward making these sort of things more public. That to make this decision just seems kind of...
How much information about lawmakers' children are in these documents? That was one thing raised. Will this pose a threat to our kids?
They're usually listed as, I guess in this case, like dependents of theirs. So pretty much just their names and I think typically ages.
Look, it's not as if what's at issue is material that is not already public being made public. Let's be clear about that. So if they're concerned about some risk to their family or to themselves by virtue of this information being out there, it's already out there. You know, a kidnapper can come to Austin and go to the Ethics Commission and request one of these forms and we'll receive it because they don't say, are you a kidnapper? Okay, we're not going
to
give it to you.
Well, they can request it from the privacy of their home in Marfa. They don't even have to come to Austin.
This is getting very dark.
And creepy.
Let's hope that none of that happens.
So you back in April did the last release with Dave McLean of the Tribune, the last release of these forms, the most current version of these forms.
Yeah, we requested, we were looking for Texas House Senate, just getting the most recent, if there's any of them that slipped through the cracks a year past or so. So those are currently up, and we'll be getting the state side.
In fact, very possibly by the time people listen to this podcast, or not long after, the state officials' personal financial disclosure forms, which we have gotten from the Ethics Commission, will be posted.
Yes.
So kidnappers, start your engines.
And I want to talk about the conventions that are coming up this week. But first, I want to, since we're talking about Ryan, stick with Ryan for a little bit and do just a quick election wrap-up before that topic becomes totally dead. One of the things that Ryan did in the last... however many hours or in a week is figure out how much each candidate spent per vote in the primary elections. And how did that turn out? Was it it was not a cheap thing for many people.
For one person in particular, it was not cheap at all. David Alamil, who was in was running for CD33 in the Dallas area, he was the, I guess, if you call him the big winner, but the big spender of that race and of all the races in terms he spent... $1,200 per vote.
More than $1,200 per vote.
And
a lot of it his own money, right?
It was pretty much all his own money.
Have you figured out how much Rick Perry spent per vote during the presidential campaign? That would be interesting, wouldn't it, actually?
Are there some ballots that he's still on that haven't voted yet?
Well, one thing I thought about Alamil, I don't know about that. One thing I thought about Alamil is I need to ask Alamil to give money to the Tribune. Maybe we just ask him to put up a billboard for us in Dallas. I was driving around Dallas a couple months ago, and you could not go anywhere without seeing an Alamil billboard.
Yeah.
I mean, he obviously just spent and spent and spent.
And he spent what, $1,000 more per vote than anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, the second and third were actually people who were also running in the same race with him.
And they were?
Steve Salazar and Krista Castaneda. They both... received not, it was more of a they received less votes thing than how much money they spent, but they were both Steve spent 215 per vote, Krista 173.
All right, so you have the
Ryan
list
is very
there,
close
right?
to these people now, Steve and Krista.
Steve, Steve, how's it going? let me ask you this. So the two people who ended up in the runoff in that race were Mark Veazey, state representative, and Domingo Garcia, former state rep. So how much did Veazey spend per vote, and how much did Domingo spend per vote?
It's going to be...
Look, he just shuffled past, but I think Ben, Domingo was about $100.
Make the hold music, Ben, while he's looking it
but
up.
Part of this is that they got more votes, right? So their money went further.
Well, yes, but still, from a bang for the buck or bounce per ounce or whatever phrase that if Ross were here laying his whole mini pearl corn pone crap on us, whatever he said, if he were here, he'd be calm.
whatever, you know what he said, whatever he said.
You know, Ross has a price tag hanging from his hat like Minnie Pearl when he's sitting here recording the podcast.
It's his Cardinals cap, I believe.
It is from his Cardinals cap, yes.
Price tag is for $1,200.
Well, so if Ross were here, while Ryan's looking this up, I'll ask you. If Ross were here, we'd be talking about the Carlos Beltran hit that actually broke up the Johan Santana no-hitter, which is a total fiction that it was even a no-hitter. That's an FYI. Okay, so Domingo and Vizi.
So Domingo, he was up there, $103 per vote.
Vizi.
And Vizi was only $28.
So Vizi, who finished first,
who
did
was
he
in
not?
First, yeah.
He finished first in that race, spent $28 per vote. Alamil, who finished...
Not first.
I think it was fourth. It was fourth, yeah.
$1,200 and plus per vote. This is a great country.
How much did Grady Yarbrough spend to get into the U.S. Senate race?
Did he spend anything?
Yeah. It's still a mystery.
It's unclear because he filed no. I thought he filed no reports.
Yeah, we're still waiting for his filing.
Ben did Alamil still? Did he spend more than any other candidate?
I think any other candidate in
that
state.
Primary. In the primaries.
In the
overall?
Primary overall.
I don't think not counting the federal. Because I'm sure Dewhurst.
Yeah, right. Dewhurst. Oh, yeah. I think Dewhurst took the.
No, Dewhurst
took
was
the
like,
lead there.
Dewhurst, per vote, he did. Dewhurst spent like $27 per vote.
No, I just meant overall. He spent $2.6 million. Was it $2.6 million, something like that, in his race?
This was as of one of the filings right before, so he very possibly spent more since we last calculated this, but we had him at 17 million.
We don't know how much was put in, like, on the last, isn't there like a Telegram report or something?
Yes, yeah, those
would be factored in. The last couple days, he may have put in more for all we know.
But so based on the most current information we have, he spent in a state race, not the top three, it looks like on your list, were all U.S. Senate candidates on the Republican side. He spent more than any other candidate and spent more per vote than any other candidate and finished fourth.
Alamil?
Yeah. So that's, not efficient.
Might make one wonder why they did it in the first place.
Well, this again was a statewide race, although not a federal race, but, you know, you think of Farouk Shami and how much money he poured into his
Well, the fact is
race.
Tom Leppard spent a bunch
well,
of money,
Tom,
didn't he?
And yeah, he did.
He spent the second highest, actually. He was 5.2. So, I mean,
But he didn't spend significantly more per vote than Dewhurst did.
Yeah, they were both $27. They had some change that was separated them.
Didn't get any more votes.
Right? Yeah, but didn't result in anything.
In the state Senate, perhaps unsurprisingly, Elizabeth Ames Jones spent the most with like $76
and didn't make the runoff. Per vote. It's amazing.
Donna Campbell, I think, spent $40,000 or $80,000, something ridiculous like that. Most of the money she spent was from a loan, a personal loan that she took out. So
her meteoric rise is pretty fascinating, I think.
Well, I will say, and just keeping on campaign finance real quickly, I'll be interested to seeing when the reports come out before the runoff, whether or not Elizabeth, for Donna Campbell, if she ends up taking any of the money that was shipped over.
Although
to
she's famously
well, she
rejecting
has said very
TLR
specifically,
money.
I will not take TLR's money.
Let's
in
all say
race.
That again in unison.
True.
She's not taking TLR money,
but
she says.
Well, and so maybe she won't take TLR, but maybe there
but they're
is,
individuals.
Right, they're
look,
individuals.
Look, that right, in some ways, just to toggle over that for a second, because I know we're going to talk
let's
about
toggle.
The aftermath of and so on. We've already done that last week. But the Wentworth-Campbell race is going to be really interesting, because in some ways, Wentworth was better off in a runoff with Elizabeth Ames Jones. I think that this Donna Campbell thing is, and I think, again, it comes back to this question of who she take money from, how much she have available to her, and how does she conduct this runoff? Donna Campbell is an unknown. I mean, don't know her, an unknown. She came out of nowhere. Well, of course, she ran against Lloyd Doggett for Congress 2 years ago.
And did well.
She did fine, but did better than Sylvia Romo, I mean, on a percentage basis, right? But
people seem to respond to her.
People
which
know,
they see
people
her
know
in
who
person.
She is. But you're right, she's a bit of an unknown quantity, and she is a true Tea Party candidate.
Yes.
A true Tea Party candidate. And so this race will become much more the establishment versus the Tea Party in a way that Elizabeth Ames Jones, Jeff Wentworth runoff would not really have been.
And I think we've mentioned this before. Who are the people that are going to be around voting on July 31st? Are they going to be the moderates?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Is there some moderate bus trip to Belize or something? What does that mean?
Well, the whole idea of in a runoff, you've got the most energized within any party that are willing to come out.
The theory here is that also with Cruz on the ballot in the runoff, and you got Donna Campbell, and you got a lot of these races in which the choice that is in CD25, you got Roger Williams versus Wes Riddle. Wes Riddle is a real Tea Party candidate. In a lot of these Republican primaries that are remaining, Travis Clardy and Chuck Hobson and Nacogdoches, and you've got a real choice. That is helpful to the people who have the energized turnout, and it will be.
I'm fascinated with that race. I think it's going to be
which one?
The Don Campbell.
I think part of what you're saying is that I think her rise is sort of a result of people sort of being turned off by the idea of the kind of usual race you might see between the Wentworth and Jones that people were expecting. I mean, that's basically what Wentworth said he was expecting to get into a runoff with Campbell from about 2 weeks
but
out.
But I think we're
basically the Wentworth Jones thing had gotten so nasty and was like on TV all the time, just them sniping at each other.
It was lot like the Nebraska U.S. Senate race where that woman Deb Fischer won because she ducked while the other two shot across the field at each other, and in some ways that's what Campbell did, although she didn't finish in first. She came within a hair's breadth of what
it was almost like a third. I mean,
well, and if you look at the individual, I know we're getting too deep in the weeds on this. If you look at the individual counties, Harris County, Hayes County, and Travis County, where she had run before when she was running against Doggett, or where a lot of her campaign signs were up,
she did really well.
She won both those counties. In fact, she won four out of the six counties in that district. Came really close to winning a fifth, and then got beat up in Bear County, where Wentworth had the base. She has good organization in those little small rural. I mean, Travis is not rural, but the part of Travis that the district is in is the suburbs, less populated, not the urban center at all. So she does really well in those areas. We'll see what happens in Bear County. If she can get some money, then she can focus on Bear.
Is it easy to tell when her? Just to come back to Ryan for a second, her vote total per vote was what?
Do you want Ben to sing us a song while you look her up?
No, I was actually quicker this time. She picked up 25,000 votes.
And $7.18.
$7.18
$7.18 per vote. Wow. Fantastic.
Man.
Very efficient.
She just took everyone to Starbucks, basically. Got them a grande latte.
A delicious latte.
Yeah. But this dichotomy between the Tea Party and establishment factions of the Republican Party is something that will probably play out to some extent at this week's convention.
And Ben's going, right?
I'll be at the Republican convention, yes.
In Fort Worth.
Heading up tonight so I can be there bright and early to hear Governor Perry speak Thursday.
Fort Worth, the home of the Tribune's own Justin Bieber / Todd Wiseman.
That's right.
Except he's not going to be there. He's going to be doing his whole...
He's going to be on tour.
Bieber winking at people here in the office, actually.
So why have you chosen to go to the Republican convention instead of the Democratic convention, which is happening at the same time in Houston?
As opposed to Ross Ramsey going to the Democrats?
Ross is going to the Republicans.
So Jay is going to the Democratic convention. Jay is communist. Yeah. Ben's a fascist. Jay's a communist.
I think mostly it's because in terms of impact on the general election.
Stop it. The reason that you're going to the Republican convention is because the Republicans are where the action is at. The Democrats are meeting
that's
in the Whataburger.
Right.
In the parking lot of a Whataburger. Come on.
Yes, that's it. I mean, in terms of Central Texas, we're going to have Wentworth and Donna Campbell people running all over the place. I think that's going to be interesting to look and see how many. The conventions are the far ends, generally, of the two parties. You're going to have a lot of Tea Party delegates there who are going to be really excited about Donna Campbell, going over to her little table that she'll have on the floor there. I would assume she'll have a table there on the floor. It's going to be interesting to see Ted Cruz and David Dewhurst kind of beat each other up in Spanish there during the convention. And it'll be interesting to see things like, how loud the boos are when Joe Strauss and David Dewhurst get up on stage and speak.
What day is Strauss speaking? That would be interesting.
I think Strauss is actually a Saturday. I know Dewhurst is Friday, and Perry is going to be Thursday.
I do think the reaction to Strauss at that convention will be interesting. I agree.
I mean, he and Dewhurst have caught some little jeers here and there over the last couple. Of course, in 2008, when then President Bush delivered a video message to the convention, he was roundly booed.
This is the same President Bush who was denied the opportunity to be a delegate 1 year back when he was governor, right? The split in the party goes back far enough that George W. Bush was perceived to be not adequately conservative back in 96 or something. You all are too young to know
Bush.
This. Actually.
Oh, I was confused.
No, blah, what do those people think of him? Forget it.
But I think it's really fascinating to. I mean, both conventions are going to be fascinating to watch.
Republicans,
but
the Libertarians.
Yes, the Libertarians also meeting in the DFW area at one of the hotels near the airport, I believe.
So the keynote speaker at the Democratic convention is Mayor Castro of San Antonio. The keynote speaker at the Republican convention is
Paul Ryan.
Is it Paul Ryan?
I mean, he's speaking on Saturday towards the end.
And it's public, as opposed to the Santorum speech Friday,
which is closed. I mean, you know, each day has its own headline speaker. Perry, obviously, on Thursday. I guess Dewhurst on Friday. But then Paul Ryan is closing on Saturday.
When is Cruz speaking to the convention?
Cruz is not speaking to the convention.
Why is that?
I would assume because he doesn't hold a state office at the moment.
So the dude gets to speak, but Cruz doesn't get to speak.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
I mean, you know, there are some breakout sessions. Oh, and speaking of breakout sessions, you have Ron Paul also speaking, not at one of the general convention sessions, but at a breakout session. He'll be given a room to give a speech in. And it'll be interesting to see how large room that is.
No matter who's there.
That's right. There will be plenty of delegates who are Ron Paul supporters. Oh, yeah. I mean, you remember 2 years ago, this is where you had the Ron Paul supporters on the Republican convention really kind of not necessarily take over, but make a lot of inroads.
Well, and it's happened in other states so far this year. Right. The Paulites have come into these conventions and kind of dominated.
Yeah, I mean, there are
he just snagged half of Louisiana's delegates.
There are Ron Paul Republicans that are in high up positions within the Republican machinery. You know, locally here, you've got Don Zimmerman, who has been a Ron Paul supporter forever, who, when he ran for the state house, was called not Republican enough his opponent, Jeff Fleece, ran against him and won the primary and then lost to Strama, but, you know, ran saying, well, he's not really a Republican, he's a Libertarian. And now Don Zimmerman is in the executive committee of the Texas Republican Party. So, and that was 2 years ago that he got that position. So anything's possible at these conventions. But yeah, I mean, the Ron Paul people said a month ago, well, we have 30% of the Texas delegates already locked up, or we believe we're going to have 30% of the delegates. He did not get 30% of the vote in Texas, but because of the way they use the convention rules, or the state convention rules, they assume they're going to get about 30% of the delegates.
But there is some action going on at the Democratic convention, right? They're selecting a new party chairman,
right?
Possibly a Hispanic.
Hinojosa versus David Van Os's wife, right?
Yes. There are at least three candidates now,
and I'm not sure who the third one is.
Yeah, I mean, they'll have to. Whoever gets it will have to sort of pull a rabbit out of their hat to sort of turn things around at this point.
If only a rabbit would do the trick. I think it's more than a rabbit.
Hair.
What?
What? A large rabbit.
Oh, okay.
Land
Maybe
this
a
plane
jackalope?
Reed.
What about a jackalope? You could have said jackalope.
Hey,
that would have made
Beam,
a lot more
isn't
sense.
It time to end this podcast?
We actually don't know. We've lost track of the time.
Have we?
So we're just going to keep talking.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Keep talking until the last listener
now
stops
it's next
listening.
Week's podcast.
Why should anyone care about these conventions? What's happening?
Ryan, it's always this much fun.
Ryan's having a great time.
I mean,
yes, it's fantastic.
Okay. The biggest news generally out of the conventions is what the party, I mean, and it's not really even necessarily news, but the biggest kind of stink out of the different conventions is the party platform.
Which they then ignore.
Right, which they then ignore because generally the platforms on both these parties ends up being more extreme than what the candidates want to, you know, wrap themselves in for a general election. You know, even if they agree with the vast majority of whatever's in the platform, there's always one or two things that maybe they don't want to discuss when they're on the campaign trail. I think it's more interesting this time because you're going to have people in runoffs, you know, beating each other up on the little convention floors, or, you know, delegates. I mean, these are the activists. These are the people that will be around to vote in July. And so you want to make sure that as many of them are on your side as you're heading into those runoffs. And that's something new that we don't usually see, because we don't usually get our primary bumped back into the end of May by litigation. So
it's not the newsiest thing in the world.
It isn't the newsiest thing.
Is it more
world?
Like the society pages, like Bill Cunningham, like what's the trend in the party?
You know, you can find some interesting stuff. You know, the one in 2010, I was fascinated with the Republican convention side, the former Ron Paul, or the Ron Paul supporters that were kind of shunned or hadn't been shunned by the party, ended up taking over some major positions within the party. We had for the first time in almost forever the Republican chair not winning re-election during a convention, with Ministeri taking over in that election. So that was, you know, interesting news. But
and at the Democrats, because Keisha Rogers once again won her primary, look for the LaRouche supporters to be treating you to a sort of beautiful chorale.
Yes, the LaRouche singers.
In protest.
Yes,
yeah.
I got some sound from them singing last time, and I don't think I used it for anything. But
I was hoping you were going to say buffet instead of chorale.
Actually, no. The buffet is open now, so we should probably leave.
Okay, good.
Questions or comments? Tribcast@texastribune.org. On behalf of Evan, Ben, Ryan, and our producer Todd
Beeb,
thanks for listening.
The genius switch is always in the off position. You can't stop rolling.
The quote at the end of David Letterman videos is, there is no off on the genius switch, right?
Yes.
You said the exact opposite.